Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we are proud to welcome Jeff Watson, founding member of the rock and roll band Night Ranger. Jeff has also worked on the Oscar and Grammy-nominated film Enchanted and has composed for TV shows like Nash Bridges. We will also be speaking with him about his session work and his eight-finger tapping technique. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Flow to the Izzo Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a great show. I'm really excited. All week I've been listening to Jeff's work, and there's some really great stuff that he's doing, great sounds. So we're going to get into deep into his gear, his technique, his playing, the whole thing. Scott, what have you been up to?
Well, same old, same old. Been working on NAMM videos. Also been getting some other things in line. For instance, I do want to mention again that we want to thank Proco Sound for the Evolution cables that we are using here on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely check those out. And as mentioned before, you can find those on Sweetwater's website to purchase them. They're great cables. So make sure you check them out. And then also want to mention that for our listeners, the Guitar Player magazine book from Hal Leonard just came out, and I believe you can still pre-order it or order it from them using the discount that's for our show, which gets you 25% off the cover price and free domestic shipping. So, and that ad code is BBHL, Boy Boy Hal Leonard, and you can find that on guitarplayer.halleonardbooks.com.
Yeah, I ordered mine. I think it's coming soon.
Yeah, yeah.
They announced that it was shipped, so I'm excited to hear, to see it.
Yeah,
so it's a great book.
Yeah, it'll be really cool. And then, like I said, there'll be a video up of Jeff interviewing. I can always remember
Jim Crockett.
Yeah, I can always remember his daughter's name. I can't remember his. Jim Crockett and Kara Crockett. And then the very end, about the last 10 minutes, some guy named Billy Sheehan shows up and starts talking to us. So
yeah,
so we looked him up on Wikipedia. Apparently, he's a bass player.
And he's been on our show a couple of times.
Yeah.
But yes, he was Jim was really surprised that we both have a lot of our old guitar players. We kept them because it's like a tome of different, you know, all those interviews with all those people from times gone by. It's like it's important stuff, and he was just like he could not believe that we kept them. And Billy's another one. He has a whole bunch of them, so it was kind of cool. Okay, well, listen, let's get in. We got a lot to cover tonight. We'll be right back after this, and we got some interesting stuff with Jeff Watson.
Hi, Kenny Burgle here from Sweetwater. We're super happy to support Jeff and Scott and the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show on LA Talk Radio. You can see all the specs and pics of your favorite gear and amazingly low prices online at Sweetwater.com or call us at 800-222-4700. Every week, Jeff and Scott welcome heavy experts and industry mavens exploring the coolest guitars and basses, pedals, amps, strings, accessories, everything you need to rock. Sweetwater sells all that cool stuff, so listen to the Flow and then check it out online at Sweetwater.com or call one of our pro guitar enthusiasts at 800-222-4700. Don't forget that Sweetwater has 24 months equal payments, no interest financing available too. Check that out at the bottom of every Sweetwater webpage where it says easy financing and hit the red apply now button. Thanks for listening. This is Kenny Burgle and Sweetwater saying, rock on with the flow.
Hola, amigos. Hello, everyone. My name is Billy Sheehan, and I'm from the Winery Dogs, and you're watching The Flow Guitar Enthusiasts.
There's Billy doing what he does best. Anyway, it's a really an honor to have guitarist, songwriter, producer Jeff Watson in. He's done a lot of stuff. I'm going to play a clip before I bring him on that just kind of defines what he's all about. It's just killer tone, and we're going to talk about what he was using. This is a live clip from him with Night Ranger, and it's his solo. It's his live solo from Live in Japan. But anyway, he's done a lot of stuff. He's done film composing, television composing. We're going to talk about that. And I pulled some clips from his solo album. We're going to go through that because there's a lot of different great guitar sounds that he's using there. And if somebody exemplifies tone, it is him. So let me go ahead and play this one clip, and then we'll get right into it with Jeff. Please welcome Jeff. Jeff, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. And also, too, Joey P. Sure. Who helped put this together. Joey, welcome. He's helped. He's done a lot of engineering with Jeff. And it'll be interesting to talk to him about. They revamped their studio a little while back, and we can talk about that, too. But, Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot for having me. I made a note here of all the notes I missed in that solo, and there's a tremendous amount of notes I missed there.
I was just thinking you must be an extremely fast quickly. Typist. You must type a lot of words per minute.
That's interesting. I have not listened to that since it came out. I don't listen to myself, so thanks for playing that. I won't probably hear that ever again.
It was interesting because I was editing. I pulled clips from your different songs and stuff, and I was like, I was going to edit that and bring it, play it a shorter clip. But it was like, it was just too good. So I just like, no, it's a 2-minute clip. We'll play the 2-minute clip. It was great. So, but I wanted to ask you.
I appreciate that.
I actually
started with we edited that in half. I think it started with a picking solo that was. That's more of what I do is picking guitar. But anyway, that we cut that off on the album. We just took the last half of my standalone solo there. There was something before that, but I don't know where that went.
Mm. Well, let's just briefly touch about. Let's go through your background and your influences, and then sure. I want to get into We'll talk a little bit about Night Ranger gear, tone, sound, and then I want to get into your solo career. That's basically where I want to take it. But the just give us a little background, your influences, and you know what you listened to back in the day, and just basically how you got to be who you are now.
Well, I think the way I got to be who I am now was had a lot more to do with my work ethic and everything outside of music than actually being a musician, mm-hmm. all the jobs I had that weren't musically related. But I listened a lot to Shuggie Otis and Johnny Winter and Ritchie Blackmore and Jeff Beck and Ronnie Montrose, who later on became a very good friend and my producer when I was a teenager. And those were, and I'm sure there were others, but those spring to mind as people that influenced my wanting to be a guitar player. But at the same time, I stopped listening to people after a while, and people questioned me about that. But I decided, it wasn't a conscious decision. I just was a writer since I was a little kid. So I was more into invention than application, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why that's probably why I'm not so good at some types of guitar playing and just honed in on what sounded good to my ears, as it were.
Well, it's interesting because in that solo, which I want to talk about in a little bit about the eight-finger tapping method that you developed, it's interesting because you're doing the tapping, but you still, like some of your influences, a strong blues influence, you still do the bends and you have that kind of soulful character. A lot of guys that do the tapping, they do more like a classical type of chordal structure in our arpeggios, and they kind of lose that.
Right.
But I notice, and I'll play some other clips too, you'll be like tapping away and then you'll like do this radical bend, or you'll pull it, you know, you'll just pull the string somewhere else. And it's, so it's kind of combining both. So you got that tap thing and then you got...
Well, there's reasons for that. One thing is that one of the first things I worked on when I first picked up an electric guitar, I was late to the game playing electric, but one of the first things I wanted to work on was vibrato. I thought it was really important, and one of my hometown heroes was a guy named Billy Fott, and I would watch him play, and he was really, it had a really sweet vibrato that you could apply equally or fast or slow or deep or bring it on when you needed it, and I thought that was... it sounded to my ear as a good thing. So that was one of the first things I worked on. And with regard to note choice, because I'm not really a formally schooled musician, I throw in a lot of notes that probably don't musically make a lot of sense. I've had this conversation with one of my good buddies is a guy named Steve Morris. And whenever we get together or we play some of my old stuff or just whatever it may be, he'll ask me, why did you put that in there? And I just go, it sounded kind of cool to me. He goes, you know, that makes no sense. I say, of course, I don't care because I'm not as smart as Steve is. So that my reason for placement is generally because it just tickles my ear.
Right. Well, but that's cool. I mean, that's what it should be. It's what sounds good to you. That's important. And if it sounds right, it's right. I mean, really, that's what I've studied music and yeah, there's a lot of rules and stuff, but basically a lot of the major composers, even back in the old days, they broke the rules because it was cool. And it was like, this sounded great, I'm going to do this. So, and then it became a new trend. So that's okay. That's all right. But now let's get to, you know what I'm saying. But now let's talk about a little bit before Night Ranger. What were you using? What was your gear at that time? And then let's go into Night Ranger. How did that change or did it change?
Sure. Well, when I was very young, I'll make it quick. My parents got me a little ukulele or something for Christmas when I was like 4 or 5, and I think I ripped through the little book that came with it the same day of Christmas, and I was able to play all the songs that evening. They were kind of like, maybe we're on to something here, and I was already writing poetry as a very young kid, and so maybe that side of my brain, and my parents were in the Folk Music Society of Sacramento, and my dad was a politician, but they would gather a couple times a month at people's houses and play, you know, it was great sing-alongs with banjo and a, you know, the gut bucket bass and, you know, a lot of acoustic guitars and harmonies, and I would join in. But my first real guitar was a 12-string, a Yamaha 12-string, with a neck, neck like an archery bow, and very heavy strings. And I went from that to an old Gibson Auditorium we found at a pawn shop, I think, for like $75, that I traded away foolishly for I think a Gibson ES-330, an old one, and somehow that disappeared somewhere along the lines. And then my mother got me an acoustic 300, I think maybe 300-watt amplifier, solid state, with a set of 612 speakers that actually helped formulate my playing style, because it was so brash and so loud that the tone was not good for my particular ears, that I would stand 50 feet away with a cord down the hallway in my parents' house. And so now when I play, I like to be quite far away from the amplifier and not hear myself very well. I like a bit of a delay from when my pick hits the string to when I actually hear the note, and which is kind of frustrating, I'm sure, to people that can stand in front of their amps and listen to themselves and enjoy it. But anyway, from that, I went to a SG, what was it called? A Les Paul Special, I think, but it looked like an SG, mm-hmm. a 1960. It was red with one soap bar pickup on it and a stop tailpiece. And I later sold that for rent for $200 to our roommate. And I ended up getting an SG Standard, a brown one, and with two humbuckings in it. And my mother's cat peed in the guitar case, and you can't ever get cat pee out of a guitar case or the guitar. So I sold that in an incense-filled room to some unsuspecting person to pay rent. And from there, I was working in a music store by this time, and an old gent came in and sold me a 1956 Les Paul Gold Top with the soap bar pickups in it. And I talked the owner of the music store into letting me buy it from him for $300.
Nice.
And my friend Ronnie Montrose at the time agreed to route it out, and we put in some humbucking pickups.
Ouch.
And that's the guitar. Oh, it's beautiful. It's hanging on my wall as we speak.
Well, at least you still have that one.
I do still have that. That's right. And this was very generous of this music store. His name was Jack Catman. It was a place called Sunrise Music up in Citrus Heights, California, which is up by Sacramento. My family's from the Bay Area, but we had to grow up there because that's where the state capital is, and that's where my father worked. But another guy came in and sold us an old Guild F412 12-string.
Oh, nice.
With the carved back and all maple, and it's just beautiful. Another time for $300, and I saved up, and I actually acquired that, and that's the guitar I used for all the Night Ranger albums. And that's sitting on the stand right here as well. It's beautiful. But I started out on 12-string, and that developed my flat-picking technique. But I do hold my pick backwards. I hold the front edge up as opposed to down, and I start everything with an upstroke.
Oh, really?
Which is why solos, I get asked a lot about I don't mean to jump ahead here, you guys, but I get asked a lot about the Don't Tell Me You Love Me solo. And that's a very easy solo for me to play because it's all picked, but I start everything with an upstroke. So that facility makes that quite simple. And that's been a conversation for many years. That came out 30-something years ago now. But anyway, that's how this all started. And my flat-picking technique is because of my work on a 12-string. I didn't start electric till I was much older.
Okay, well, listen, since you just mentioned that, I do have the lead clip of Don't Tell Me You Love Me, so let me go ahead and play that. But you're in good company. Another guy that used to start with an upstroke was Robert Fripp from King Crimson. That was one of the things he did.
Wow, he's a great player, huh?
And it changes the whole rhythmic and the whole sound that he had, and made it a little more, to me, it sounded more strange, but it was interesting to do that. But let me go ahead and play the clip.
Strange.
Yeah, there you go. Let's play us, and then we'll talk a little more about it. Here's Don't Tell You Love Me, the lead. Oh, I mean the little the tap of the lamp. But I mean yeah. those bends are radical. I mean those are really nice.
Well, listen, sorry to interrupt, but the first half of that solo is Brad.
Okay, so he's the one that's slamming getting that like bomb 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 on the whammy bar. He was the one who did that. But you're doing the
tap.
Yeah,
I never used a vibrato bar. Ever, I still don't. But he did that whole first half is Brad playing, and then I come in when the picking starts happening right there. You know that it's the equal amounts of time on that solo, but that first half is Brad.
You're not doing you're doing the tapping, right?
No, that's flat picking.
That's flat picking. Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. Now. So
it's much easier to flat pick when you start with an upstroke because I upstroke the first two notes. Dun, 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 and you get it going from there. And I always had, because of the 12 string stuff, I always was able to jump around strings quite a bit. So string skipping was just a normal thing when you're playing bluegrass and folk music. So I applied it there, but that's flat picking. Yeah, there's no tapping in there.
Oh, wow. That is amazing. I would have thought you had tapped it to get it that fast, but that's really fast.
No, but I have seen people that have learned how to do that solo tapping. When we used to go on the road and we were still on the radio and cover bands were covering our songs, you know, we would go out to clubs, especially Brad and I would go out, and we'd see local bands play just get out of the hotel, and they would cover that, and guys had learned how to do that solo tapping. I thought it was pretty intriguing, which I couldn't do. I couldn't tap it because I just know how to pick it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and I wrote it, so I don't really need to learn it another way now.
Well, it's cool, and again, it shows you doing that fast picking, and then you just throw in like a real radical bend, and it's just, I mean, I love those bends. Those are great, especially the end of that solo. It's like, whoa, you're really going.
Thank you very much.
Now, quick question. Before Night Ranger, when you were talking about your acoustic amp, did you use 12-inch speakers in that? Was that 12-inch Altex in it? You didn't have the horn.
It was six 12-inch speakers. I don't believe there was a horn in that. I had this cabinet until 10 or 15 years ago, and then it was in storage, and I think I gave it to a neighbor whose kid was starting to play guitar. It was extremely loud, and it was a big cabinet. I liked the sounds of 10s back when I was much younger. A guy where I grew up played, I don't know what he played, maybe an old Ampeg V2 through six 10-inch speakers, and that was a real nice floaty sound. But no, that amp went away, and in front of it, I remember using not much, to be honest. I moved quickly away from the solid state and got to a Ampeg V4, and went to a 412 cabinet, and then continued on through the years. But there was a echo device I had, and I've been racking my brain this minute trying to think of who made it. It worked on a light circuit. Well, maybe it was a Lowry Worley. I don't know. There was a company. And I've never seen one since. But anyway.
There was a Morley. I think that was an optical delay type of thing. I think Morley made one years ago.
Maybe it was Morley. Yeah. And I wish I would have held on to that because it was an unusual thing. I wanted the Echoplex, but the Morley was $50 at some pawn shop, and it seemed to do the trick for a couple years.
Yeah. Now the Ampeg, the V4, was that what you used in Night Ranger?
It was what I started out using in Night Ranger. Yes, it was. And I've used quite a few different amps. We eventually ended up going with Mesa Boogie, who have been a great company for us for so many years now. But the V4 was the first amp I was using when I was out playing live. Before Ranger, I had my own band up in Sac, and I was being produced by Fitz and then Montrose. And because Fitz was producing me, because Sammy introduced me to Fitz when I was going to join Sammy's band, and Fitz said, "Well, I want to start a band with you," and I got a couple friends, Jack and Kelly and Brad. So let's all get together and talk about doing something. So that's how that got started. But I was already doing shows, because Fitz went on the road with Sammy, he goes, let me turn you on to Ronnie. So Ronnie came in and started producing, and I was already on the radio as the Jeff Watson Band, modestly titled. We couldn't think of a better name. But anyway, we went out and did shows, and I was opening for Ted Nugent and Hart and Sammy and, you know, the big shows, big fish, small pond syndrome, I guess, as it were. But I was on the radio but didn't have anything to sell in the stores. But I was using Ampeg V4 through Marshall cabinets, and I was trying to get as many Celestion 30 watts as I could in those cabs, because or 25s or 30s, whatever I could get a hold of that were low wattage.
Mm-hmm. Now, what did you use on Don't Tell Me You Love Me? What was the guitar and amp that you were using on that?
That was that 56 Les Paul. Through Boogie Mark IIc Plus and Marshall cabinet with Greenback the Celestians.
Okay, great sound.
And it, you know what? It may have been part of that. I'm trying to remember because we had a lot of amps in the studio, and this is going back quite a while from my old memory. But I borrowed a Marshall from Sammy Hagar and took it to L.A. as well that we used for some of the first album. So it was either the Marshall, which was a red combo, believe it or not, 212 Marshall combo, or my Boogie Mark IIc. Mm. But it was definitely the 56 Les Paul with the humbuckings that Ronnie put in.
Oh, okay. Now, on Sister Christian, what did you use on that for the lead?
Well, that's Brad Gillis playing the lead on Sister Christian, not me.
Okay, that's him. Okay. The
it is, and he used the same guitar he used on almost everything, which was, I believe, it's a 62 Strat. He's done quite a bit of work to it. He's used that on almost everything, and you know, I'm sure he switched the pickups out over the years. We've had signature pickups, and tried different things. He put a wireless system in it at one point. And it made a little bit of noise, so I think he stopped using that. Maybe he didn't. Or no, a switching system for effects. But he was tinkering with it for a long time, but it was always that 62 Red Strat, I believe.
Was he using Mesa Boogie too?
Yes, he was.
He was using Mesa Boogie.
In fact, I think he brought us to Mesa Boogie because he went out for a few months with Ozzy right as we were getting signed in 1981, I believe, and I think that's right as we were getting into Boogies, and so I think the whole band started using Mesas.
Oh, okay. Now, I want to talk real quick about, and then we'll get into the solo stuff, I wanted to talk a little bit about you writing for television and film, and I pulled a clip out of the lead for Secret of My Success, which is an interesting, it's the title song for the movie. Then you also did work for Nash Bridges and a couple other films. Did they, as a composer, basically let you just write something, or grabbed a song that you already written? Or it sounds like Secret of My Success, they were kind of specific because you actually wrote the lyric to the movie, or was that?
Well, the song Secret of My Success was written by David Foster, along with Jack and Mike Landau, down in L.A., specific to the film.
Oh, okay. So they wrote the song and you played on it, and you the band played and sang on it?
Well, that was a Night Ranger song, and that was the title of the album. Was that the title? No. The album title was maybe it was on Big Life or Seven Wishes. I forget at this moment. But, yeah, but that was on a Night Ranger record. But it was written specifically for that movie. And I wrote the solo for that, and then Brad and I split the harmony parts when we performed it on the album.
Oh, okay, because I noticed that, yeah, there was a lot more interesting synthetic brass licks, and it wasn't as characteristic of what I've heard of Night Ranger before, because you guys are pretty guitar, don't you?
Not at all. That's David Foster. That's David. And he came in. He came up to the Bay Area and came in. We were working out of Fantasy over in Berkeley, Fantasy Studios, and I think it was in Studio D or A, whatever. But he came in and produced that song. The rest of the album was produced by Kevin Elson, but David produced Secret, and he was a really cool cat. And he very smart in the studio, but that's where all those odd, unusual bits of that song that don't sound like traditional Ranger, that's his influence.
Oh, okay. Now, like for Nash Bridges or something, did you just write a song or did they give you direction? Did the director, like, I want this or that?
For Nash, it was different. A couple of times, they would pull songs that I'd already released, like off of Lone Ranger. They'd use parts of my existing material for specific scenes. But it was an interesting time. Don was actually coming over here to do recording in my studio. He's a singer, and he wanted to cut some new songs. And so Don would come over here, and we'd work at night. And this was after it. I started putting music in the show. But there was a gentleman named George Bukowski who would come over, and we would actually write to the scenes for specific scenes, whatever needed to go in for fills and, you know, cuts between action sequences and things like that. But for the long bits, they were pulled from my albums. Then also we would do, like I said, we'd do Don's songs here, which was quite interesting, actually.
That's cool. Now, let's get a little bit into your 8-finger tapping technique. How did that come about? And can you kind of, I know we don't have you in studio to demo it, so I'm going to try.
Sure.
Let's try as best we can to explain it so people understand the concept behind it.
Let me first say that I utilized it as a means to an end more than something I was going to pursue as a stylistic move forward for me as a guitar player. I wanted to accomplish a series of notes, and it just seemed like a way I could get this on to a song we were doing called You Can Still Rock in America.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure I was not the only guy sitting around in my bedroom trying to figure out new ways of playing things or how to improve my style. I just was probably the first guy that got lucky enough to have it be shown on MTV, you know? And mm-hmm. so I know I get labeled with having come up with this, but I guarantee you there was probably 100,000 other guitar players around the world doing the same exact thing. We were sitting down the street from where I live now in the band house where Fitz and Jack and I lived, and eventually Kelly, and, you know, we would write and rehearse there. And I was trying to get this on guitar, and I couldn't pick it in fast enough, and we had a piano there that Fitz worked on, and so I just found the notes and I figured out I could get this if I used all my fingers. And I play a little bit of piano, and, you know, I do a lot of finger picking guitar, so I, for some reason, I was able to just spend some time and just shed on it long enough to get it down. But it's very linear, and if you watch some of the players, recent players, there's some great ones out there. In fact, I met the gentleman that replaced me in Rangers named Joel Hoekstra. He's a real, real great guitar player. But he's taken what I did to a much higher level, utilizing many more strings and tapping in between chordal things. And so it's really come a long ways since my kind of almost always one string things. You know, there's a lot more development to it now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's talk a little. I'm going to go in a little bit different direction. I pulled a lot of clips from your Lone Ranger album. Now, I want to mention to everybody, too, that you're also a songwriter, and a lot of your albums have singing on it. Now, this show's guitar, so
yeah.
I noticed that this album was strongly guitar, and there was a lot of different stuff in there. So I pulled a lot from there. But I'm going to play a clip, and we're going to start talking about a little bit, because it kind of, what I pulled, I think, kind of defines your overall, I think, your approach to tone, and it's. I want to get into a little more detail about that. The first clip I'm going to play is your 12-string, and that's Picnic Island. So let me play that, and then we'll talk a little bit about what you use and how you play that.
Sure.
Thank you.
Now, I think that best describes what you were talking about when you said when you got your 12 string to like use a pick to do that kind of finger picking style. And is that
well, that's just flat picking?
Yeah, that. But that's I know as a 12 string player and playing, which I had a Guild 112 12 string. But the thing is that trying to do that, I can now you when you're picking like that, are you starting with an upstroke?
I don't have a guitar in my lap. No, that has to be a downstroke.
That started with downstroke. Okay.
Start that.
Now, was that...
Yeah, on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I was just curious. But, I mean, because it sounds like a downstroke because it's pretty... That first note is pretty hard. I mean, you're hitting it pretty good. And then the... Is that your Guild?
Yeah, that is my Guild. That's just one pass on the Guild, and then I surrounded it by my... fake saxophone in the background off some sort of sample from that was done a long time ago, and I put in some keyboard strings in the back there, and the violin though was a next door neighbor that had lived up here in the forest with us many years ago, and he came over and threw that little violin bit in there. But yeah, that's just me playing. I'm not even sure I played to a click. I'm not sure how well that was timed, but that is the old Guild with just a flat pick and it's just a piece.
You're pretty limber there. I mean, that's fast. I mean, you're doing some fast finger picking on there. Anything particular in miking that that get that sparkle out of it?
Yeah, well, it's the standard. I mean, it's a pretty well-known technique. One at the 12th fret and one off the body of the guitar. And because the Guild doesn't have... the old Guild, I think it might have, we might have put in maybe a piezo with a little eighth inch jack to come out, but I don't think it sounded that good, so we just went with the microphones. But yeah, it was just a condenser with a 12th fret, and probably, what was I using back then? It might have been actually a 414 AKG off the body of the guitar, because I don't think I had a great mic selection in my studio. We were just getting the studio up to speed at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably how we cut that, yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm going to play another clip, and this is called Morris Minor, and it's acoustic steel string, and it's really, really some nice stuff that you're doing here. Let's play that, and then we'll talk about that a little bit. It's interesting how you counterpoint each of the different guitars and how you're going back and forth from there. And then also, too, the tone is killer. What were you using there?
That guitar has a really interesting story behind it. That is, believe it or not, that's a Takamine Jumbo 6. And I was at the NAMM show. You mentioned the NAMM show earlier when you're in your intro. I was at the NAMM show many, many years ago. And I was being endorsed by, and still am, by Takamine Innovation. And the guy that I was talking with, I believe it was actually Bill Kaman, who owned the company at the time, Kaman Industries owned Ovation. Anyway, he and I were talking, and we went out to get some food, and he goes, I got to leave this guitar in your hotel room. Do you mind? And it was this big jumbo, and it had these some scratches on it and stuff. And I go, why do you have that with you? He goes, well, Nugent used it on the Tonight Show and last night, and he wanted to break it, so I grabbed it back. He was going to break it up on the show, and he snagged it back and left it in my room. And then we forgot about it, and I said, I'm bringing it home. And so I've just kept the guitar, and I've since gotten a newer one because they've made them better. The electronics, they sound a bit better. Mm-hmm. But it's just such a pretty-sounding guitar, and I've loaned it to my nephew now, who's playing guitar up in Petaluma. But, yeah, it's a real it's a nice-sounding guitar, and we mic'd it the same way, and we did plug that one in and captured the direct as well.
Well, are you using the Takumi for both parts? Or do you, it was using the same guitar both parts?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, that is. That's just...
Because it actually, I mean, the lead, exactly the lead part does sound different. Usually, a lot of times in overdubbing, a lot of guys will just change guitars to change the, to fill it out a little bit or basically make, you know, show the difference between them. Yeah. But those are pretty distinct. I mean, what you're doing with the lead and you do these like little slide downs that are kind of cool. You hit a note and you kind of portamento down, I guess is the term for that. So that's just pretty really, that's really cool. Now,
you know, most of my the things I write start out as practice things to help develop me, develop my hands, as it were. You know, so even the song Goodbye or Don't Tell Me You Love Me or Let 'Em Run or Morris Minor or any of these things start out as things I write for myself that seem too complicated to play at the moment. So I'll make myself learn them and then keep developing them. Then I'll turn it into a song. So that's kind of how I get to these song places with a song like Morris Minor.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's interesting is, like you said, you play things that's nice to your ear, but there is something there. The way you place things, they fit. They're not stepping on each other. At least I'm not hearing that. And I think that's the gift.
It worked for me at the time. That's for sure.
All right.
It was quite a while ago.
No, it is. I have your newest song. We'll get to that in a minute. I'm leading up to it, but I'm going to play another clip from there. Some more acoustic guitar. This is called Eco Chalet. And let me play that. And then I got some questions for you.
You got it.
Now, there's a lot going on in there, and there's a lot of layers in there. Same guitar, is that the Takumi? And the lead acoustic guitar, it has a little different timbre. Is that still the Takumi, or was that a gut string?
No, that's a gut string. That was a Nova classical guitar, which was made by a gentleman named John Buscarino,
mm-hmm.
That I think he now calls them Buscarino guitars. And of all things, I met him on a beach in Florida years and years ago. And Steve and I got endorsed by John for Nova Guitars at that time. That had to be 1988, maybe 89. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's what I used for the solo parts of that over the top of the 12-string, which was the Guild.
Okay, so there's the 12 string. You're not using a six string too, because it sounds like there's two.
There's three things. You're right. There's a 12. There's a six top. The 12 jumbo guild, and the Nova classical, which is kind of a thin classical. I've since gone. It was actually stolen, but I've since gone to a Takamine classical that's the full size classical guitar. But that was more of a like a 2-inch thick guitar that was in a small case that we used.
Oh,
at the
okay.
Time.
No, I mean it's got a killer tone. The
I'd love to have it back.
What did you use on the slide guitar?
On the slide, that would have probably been my old Gibson Explorer that I used to have, because it had a really nice, clear tone for that type of approach. I believe that's what I was using for the slide through a Mike Morin modified some Marshalls for me back in the day, and I think it was probably through an old Marshall, through 412, and that was probably what I was using for that slide part.
Because it's it complements it well. And again, that's a great example of that type of layering. You got a lot of different things going on, but it's cohesive and it kind of works. It just fits together. I'm going to play one more thing with the classic guitar, Song for Rebecca. And I wanted to ask you about that tone, because it's a very, I really like the sound that you were getting from the guitar, especially the fills. Here's Song for Rebecca. Now, is that the Nova?
That is the Nova.
Are you playing with fingers or are you playing with a pick?
I'm playing with fingers for the finger picking, and then I'm playing with a pick for the fills.
The fill is? Because it's got, it sounds, I guess it's the way you play. It's not, you're not getting that much, a couple of the notes when you're playing, when you're doing the fills, you're not getting the sharp attack of a pick. It sounds almost like your thumb, like, you know, you get like
that's,
go ahead.
That could be because I hold the front of the pick up as opposed to down, and so when I pick up, if I can soften the attack, because the pick is up at the front, and if I pick up first, I don't have a guitar on, but if you'll notice, you can soften so it doesn't have the sharp click of a pick hitting a string.
Yeah, it has a real mellow timbre, which was really, really nice. Now, anything with the classical guitar, same type of miking as you did with the Takamine and the 12 string?
Absolutely.
And did you use any compression?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Oh, for compression, I'm sure we would have been using whatever was in the studio at the time, because this was all done to tape. My old 2-inch machine, which I still have, which sounds beautiful. I put 16 track heads on a 2-inch Otari MTR 90 Series 2. That's just one of the nicest sounding tape recorders.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we would put something on in front of it, or at least in the mix, that would compress it down a touch. Yeah, just
because
just
you're not getting that itself. That attack is a little more. I've heard people play that way and get like a more of a muted attack to the string when they're playing fills like that in classical music. But also, too, there's a sustain there that's a little – I mean, I know there are – I've heard classical guitars that could really sustain, but it just – there's some – you know, the notes hold when you play them. So I'm not sure if that's your technique or is it – did they compress it? And I'm not – you know, not to slight your technique, but I mean, is that a lot?
I would suggest a combination of both. I'd like to hold notes And I was always taught, you know, to try to get the string down to the wood and that sort of thing. So my left hand was at a time pretty strong, so I liked to keep things, but I'm sure the compression helped as well.
Okay, but I mean, it's just a great mellow sound, but that's amazing with a pick because it sounds like the flesh of the thumb. I mean, that's a great tone.
Yes, I wish I could play that way with my fingers and solo, but you'd have to call a different guitar player to do that.
No, it's a great, 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 great sound. Now, I'm going to play, we're almost out of time, but I want to play the most current thing that you did, the single Squirrels and Kerosene. And I want to talk about that. Yeah. It's the opening of that, and there's just all sorts of guitars in there. We got to talk about that. So let me play that real quick.
My 2.5 minute single. Yeah, that's fun.
Here you go. That's true, balls of the walls playing. What are you using on there? What's going on? There's a lot of different guitars going on in there.
Yeah, there is. That's I actually cut that a little while back, and I just got around to releasing it. That's just kind of my nature. I write and record a lot of stuff, and then I forget to release it. But that's first off, I want to say Jeremy Colson, the drummer, is just a
yes.
badass.
Yeah.
That's Vi's drummer, right?
Satrion.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. He plays with Billy Idol and Steve Vai. But he lived down the street, and maybe he still does, but he came in, and I had this piece, which is basically, again, a practice lick that I wanted to turn into a song. And I grew up playing folk and bluegrass, so I just wanted to see if I could pull it off. And I was using a swing guitar Telecaster they'd made, a Jeff Watson model Telecaster from this guitar company that I was working with at the time. And I don't play flat guitars very well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't play Strats well or Telecasters. I need the bridge to rest my hand upon. And so I forced myself to really get that down on the Tele. And that was the outcome of that. And then, of course, the solo stuff is done on my, that would probably be my 68 Gold Top Les Paul. That is another one that Ronnie put humbuckings in. We pulled the soap bars out and he threw humbuckings in it. And it's beautiful. But that's why you get that real fat front pickup tone for the first solo.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of it's done on that Tele, yeah.
The what amp were you using on that blown out sound, the real distorted sound? Was that a Marshall?
Yes. Oh yeah. That's one. I have quite a few Marshalls here, and I went for one that had some just those kind of let the guitar come through with the front pickup on. Sometimes it gets pretty muddy and funky sounding. So I think I went with a little bit heavier cone speakers. I think I went with my black cabinet up in the studio with the Marshall 100 that used to belong to somebody that we had it modded. I'm not sure whose it was. But anyway, regardless, yeah, Marshall through a Marshall cabinet and just straight in. And then we'd, you know, throw a little bit of effects on when I mixed it up here.
On the Tele, what did you use?
Go ahead.
We're running out of time. That's why I'm rushing you. But
I understand that. The Telecaster, I believe I played that through either my old Hi-Watt or the I have a PV Classic 50 here that sounds really nice through my black Marshall cab that has the heavier water speakers in it. Oh. And that's how I got that tone, just straight in. And it's very hard for me to hear myself play like that. I'm very picky about my playing. So that was a struggle to play that. I'm not sure I could play it all the way through again on that guitar.
But it sounds great.
And writing and playing the bass part on that was hard for me as well. But Jeremy kicked butt on that, and it's just a fun 2.5 minutes for me anyway. I had a kick with that. And we have squirrels here, and we have a cabin up by Lake Tahoe where we have kerosene lanterns. And so it just seemed to me like the appropriate title for a song like that.
That works great. But we're out of time. Real quick, what's coming up for you? Any tours, a new album? Is that single going to be the preview of a new album from you?
I think it will be. I have another song I want to release pretty soon. I have another one that Jeremy played drums on that I'm asking a friend of mine to guest on it on guitar. And once that's solidified, I'll release that info. But that will be coming out in the next month or so. And I've been asked to go out and do a tour with a bunch of great players that I got to sit in with in Los Angeles at the Randy Rhoads Remembered show during NAMM. And a gentleman named Brian Tichy, who plays drums beautifully. I had no idea. This guy is amazing. But I think it's guys like Rudy Sarzo and Kelly Rhodes and Brian. And Rudy, who used to live next to us in L.A., and Dewey Bragg and Stephen LeBlanc and Phil Demmel and Tracy Guns. And it's going to be a bunch of us out there, Phil X and a bunch of guests, touring around doing the Randy songs. So it's going to be a kick. And I haven't been out there in quite a while, so it's a great way to get my feet wet again. I became kind of a writing recluse, as it were, and just staying in the studio. So,
well, we definitely, I think it's great that you're getting out there and playing. We need to hear more of you.
I appreciate that very much.
I want to thank you guys both for being on the show, and I want to thank Monique for connecting me with Joey. Joey, thank you for putting this all together. I'm going to end with the clip Mountain Cathedral from the same album, from the Lone Ranger album. Guys, hang on the line. As soon as the music's done, we're off the air. I just want to talk to you guys further. Everybody, check out his site. The JW, and that's his site. You can catch out what he's doing, all the live shows, and see what's going.
JeffWatson.com.
JeffWatson.com. Okay.
Thank you, Joey. All right, there's Joey. Hi, yeah, Joey.
I'm sorry, we didn't even get a chance to ask him some questions too about recording. But
Joey,
anyway,
Joey's a whole interview. That guy's a big time producer right there.
But
badass.
It just goes to show we're out of time and we need to have you come back. So we're going to have you definitely, both of you guys, come back. There's so much more to talk about. So anyway.
Thank you so much for inviting me. This is very, I'm honored and privileged to be on your show. I know about you guys a lot. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. All right, hang on the line. This is Mountain Cathedral. Everybody have a great week and we'll see you next week.